I'm grateful to be here this morning. I'm grateful for each one who's chosen to be here. We're studying the book of Job in our young adult class right now, and we are studying the Lord's speeches this morning. It's an awesome, awesome thing to be able to worship a God who is so mighty and so great, so awesome. And I hope that we've all been engaged in the worship this morning, and we can now be engaged by reading the words that God has spoken to us through his apostles and prophets. It's a wonderful, wonderful privilege to be able to do this, and we're grateful that you're here this morning to do it together with us. I invite you to open your Bibles with me this morning to the book of 1 Timothy, chapter 4. 1 Timothy, chapter 4. And my clicker is here somewhere. There it is. We're going to talk this morning about the principle of discipline and of self-discipline specifically. Some of you may know that a little over a week ago, I was crazy enough to run my second marathon. The first one didn't cure me, so the second one apparently happened. But there are a lot of powerful analogies in the scripture that revolve around the running of a race, the disciplining of our bodies. The way that we choose to do one teaches us about the other. And here, Timothy, a young man who is part Greek, would likely have been someone very interested in physical exercise. So you think about the things that were going on in those days, the Olympic Games, the Isthmian Games, and some of the other physical competitions of strength and speed that were going on, and how the athletes of that day would have been training themselves, would have been devoting themselves to learning their sport and to conquering at their sport, to growing and doing better from their sport. And so there's just a lot of analogies that I believe the Lord kind of built into us when he made our bodies, when he gave us the ability that we have to exercise, to work, to play. And there's spiritual things that we can learn from this. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, Paul writes to his son in the faith, and in verse 7 of chapter 4, he says, "But have nothing to do with worldly fables, fit only for old women. On the other hand, discipline yourself for the purpose of godliness. For bodily discipline is only of little profit. But godliness is profitable for all things, since it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come." Paul encourages Timothy, maybe in the midst of some of his bodily training. We don't know about Timothy's habits when it comes to those things, but it's plausible that he may have been a young athlete himself, to think in terms of, yes, it's good. There is some profit that comes from bodily discipline. There's a lot of things you learn from bodily discipline. I learned a lot in my training for and running in my second marathon. But all of those things are just meant to point us to greater and more important and longer lasting benefits when we discipline ourselves for the purpose of godliness. So this morning I want us to think about those parallels, to look at some things we learn from physical discipline, and then to learn to better discipline ourselves for godliness. First, I want us to turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 24 through 27. Paul's in the midst of a discussion about food sacrifice to idols, and he's talking about in chapter 9 some of the liberties that he was willing to give up, and that the Corinthians should be willing to give up whatever liberties they have for the benefit of their brethren. And it ties into this whole argument. But one of the things that Paul points out at the end of this chapter is that it's going to take effort and sacrifice if we want to be godly people. If we want to resist the temptations that are in the world, to be like the world, if we want to really glorify God, we have to be disciplined. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, beginning in verse 24, Paul wrote, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win." So the first thing Paul points out is the quality of the effort that we have to put forth. Not just everybody who enters a race ends up winning that race. It was kind of interesting. There's a girl that I ran with in high school who runs very well at like shorter distances, 5K, 10K races. She entered her first half marathon the same day I ran my marathon, she set the women's course record that day. That's pretty impressive. Now, of course, she'd already been running and things, but she'd never run that distance before. But she ran in such a way that she won. She was running like 531 miles. For those of you who run, I mean, it's really fast, a lot faster than I was going. But the point that is the parallel drawn here is if you want to win the race, you can't just be a couch potato. You have to put forth the effort to get to the level that the Lord wants us to be at. And we live in the midst of a country that wants everything handed to us on a platter. We live in a world of shortcuts and ways to say, oh, well, you don't have to work for that. Here's a faster way. Here's an easier way. And you know, I've seen it in myself too. Like, we get trained to, whenever there's something that we want, just kind of trying to think about, well, I could do like the conventional way of like working hard for it and getting it, or there's got to be a way to get it easier. There's got to be a way to shortcut into what I want. And here's what he's saying. Listen, if you want to win the prize, you have to run to win. You can't just lackadaisical go about trying to live the spiritual life God wants you to live and stumble into winning the prize. No one goes to heaven by accident. We have to focus and not just drift in our lives, discipline ourselves so that we can win the prize. And that's what he points out in verse 25. He says, everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. And Paul here points out, he's like, Jesus does this sometimes where he points out people in the world and says, they know how to do it. Why not the children of the kingdom? We need to learn from the things people in the world are doing and apply that same diligence to the things the Lord wants us to do. He says, if you're going to compete in the games, you have to control yourself. You can't just live like you want to live, eat the things you want to eat, get up when you want to get up, you know, just kind of whatever, do the things that feel good, and expect to actually compete well in the games. These people in these days, and people who still train for the Olympics and things like that, they have to go into a fierce regimen that involves every day. It's not just you to show up on race day and think, okay, I'm going to run the marathon, I'm going to run the race. That would be a disaster. I decided in September that I was going to run a marathon in November, and that's considered really late in the game to only have like 2 or 3 months to do your training. There's people who train year-round for these kind of things if you're going to really do well at it. And so he says, listen, if you're going to compete, you've got to control yourself. And when you think about the concept of self-control, it seems almost kind of silly when you think about it. Of everything in the world, what's the one thing that you have control over? Yourself. And yet, what do we so many times have trouble doing? Controlling the one thing that we have any real control over. And it's like, we have so little control, you'd think that we would focus on the one thing that we actually can change, and yet we need reminder after reminder after reminder. Nope, control yourself. Don't just do whatever you want to do. And isn't that true, though? Is that if we're going to compete in the games, and more so, if we're going to try to get to heaven, if we're going to try to please God and be a member of His army, how much more are we going to have to deny ourselves? And say, there may be this thing that I like, there may be this thing that I want, but no! If I really want to go to heaven, I can't allow myself to indulge in that. And you know what? For the athlete, it's worth it. There are a lot of things that I did without while I was in my training, and afterward, I was able to do that. One of those things was Chick-fil-A milkshake. I discovered for a while that my body doesn't react real well to dairy, and especially when I'm trying to run, it just doesn't go well. And so we got one of those Chick-fil-A cards, and it has, you know, the free thing every month, and it, for November, the month of the race, it was milkshake. And I was like, oh man, we can't use this till after the marathon. And so that's a silly example, but it's the kind of thing we need to realize, that if we're going to be serious about serving the Lord, it's worth giving up whatever we have to give up, however beloved that thing may be, to get to the prize. He says, they do it to receive a perishable wreath. These people are giving their lives over and training every day and just like spending their lives to do, to what? You know, at the end of the games, and these days, you know, you get the little wreath there, And what's going to happen to that wreath in like a couple of days? You know, it's going to perish. It's going to fade away. But he says, we're working for something that lasts for eternity. We don't really get that eternity. We don't think about that enough. That whatever it is we have to do without here, it's only like this long when you compare it to how long the prize or the punishment is going to be. And you know what? It puts us to shame sometimes, doesn't it? They do it to receive a perishable wreath. We do it to receive an imperishable. And yet, what kind of effort do people put into winning the perishable wreath? What kind of effort are we putting in to the race for the imperishable one? I sometimes have been ashamed, even in thinking about my marathon training. And like, I put forth a lot of planning and effort into that. I planned out when my long runs were going to be and had to figure that out. And like, man, I need to do a lot better putting that kind of focus and that kind of planning and that kind of effort into what the Lord wants me to do. And we all need to do that. And so he wraps up verse 26 and 27. Therefore, I run in such a way, not without aim. I box in such a way, not as beating the air, but I discipline my body and make it my slave, so that after I preach to others, I myself will not be disqualified. Paul says, I'm not just out here trying to live a spiritual life, just kind of making it up as I go along. I'm thinking ahead. I'm making specific goals. I'm training myself. I'm disciplining myself. I want to ask you, what's your training plan spiritually for yourself right now? Do you have a general idea? Do you have a specific idea? Do you have any idea? How are you going to get to the goal? We need to be thinking about that before we show up on race day, so to speak, show up at the judgment. And we think, oh, well, I should have thought about that more. The athletes are thinking about it. How much more should Christians be thinking about it? Again, one of the things I had to do in my training was control my diet. People say, garbage in, garbage out. And what we eat affects us in more ways than we realize. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 3, one of the lessons that God taught Israel in the wilderness when he let them hunger and he let them thirst and going through that place where there was nothing, is he said in Deuteronomy 8, 3, he humbled you and let you be hungry and fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you understand that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by everything that proceeds out of the mouth of God. Food is another analogy that the Lord uses to teach us about spiritual realities. And he says, man doesn't just live by bread. Bread is vitally important. If you go long enough without bread, you will die. But he says, man should not live by bread alone. You might be able to live a full life on earth as far as your body goes by continuing to put bread and water into it. But he says, that's not what God intended for man to do. And just like you need bread, you need God's words. You need a spiritual diet that is going to help you to run the race. This is one of the things I had to really learn the hard way in my training. There were some days that I ran, and I just like not paid attention to what I ate or when I ate it. And one of those times, I was like calling Brianne to pick me up. Like it was not good because I didn't have the energy that I needed. I couldn't run and do what I wanted to do because I hadn't paid attention to my intake. And this is so true spiritually when we think about what the Lord has given us. What is your spiritual diet even like? What are you taking in on a day-to-day basis? Sometimes we think about going on a diet and doing like a specific regimen of food for like a set amount of time because we have like a weight goal or something like that. But really, when you think about it, every single person in here is on a diet of some kind. Because whenever you go to the fridge or you go to the drive-thru or whatever it is, you are choosing, every time you do that, what is part of your diet. And it makes a difference over all the choices that you make each individual time. It may not seem like a big deal at the time, and that's why it's so easy to break the diet, isn't it? Well, I'll just do it like just this once, right? I'll just get a little bit of junk food, and overall, I'll be okay. And sometimes physically, that can be true. But spiritually, how much more do we fall into the same trap of thinking, oh, I can just eat whatever I want. I can just listen and watch and surround myself with garbage in the world and still run the race when the race day comes and I'll be just fine. It's not going to work that way. Look at Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Paul kind of gives us a filter here as far as our spiritual diet goes. If it doesn't pass the Philippians 4:8 filter, should we really be eating it? Should we really be taking it in? He says, finally, brethren, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is of good report, good repute, if there is any excellence and anything worthy of praise, dwell on these things. The things that you've learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the God of peace will be with you. Paul makes the point that we know to be true, but we have a hard time carrying out on a day-to-day basis. When you get on your computer, the things that you do affect your spiritual life. The things that you choose to watch, the things that you choose to listen to, the things that you choose to read, they're all affecting us. Media has a powerful effect on us. Do you know one way that we know media has such a powerful effect on us? Because media can be really anything that's printed or is visual or as audio or things like that. Do you know how we know it has such a powerful effect on us? God gave us media to change our lives. If you're a Christian sitting here this morning, your life was changed by media. Because the printed word is a form of media. God knows it affects us. And that's why He gives it to us. And why He wants us to experience that in other ways. He says, look at things that are good. Listen to the word. Let it sink down into you. Surround yourself with it. Sing to one another. Music is another form of media. And that's one thing we've been participating in this morning. God wants our intake to change us. Worship should change us. So let me ask you the question. What does your spiritual diet consist of right now? If you had to write it down, what would it be? On a day-to-day basis, what are you choosing to fill your mind and your life and your time with? Because it affects you. Whether it's media, whether it's other people, and we have some degree of control over that. Whether it's what we're choosing to read. Whether it's what we're choosing to read in the Bible even. I want to also suggest we need to have a balanced diet from the Bible. Sometimes we get like our favorite snacks from the Bible and like just stack the pantry with those. And like there's other parts of the Bible that we need. That all Scripture is breathed out by God and is profitable for teaching, for correction, for reproof. We need to at some point read everything that's in this book. It's all meant for us to digest it and to benefit from it. So think about that this morning. What does your spiritual diet consist of? And how can we make it more maybe what the Lord would put on our plate and what He intends to strengthen us? One of the wonderful benefits that I've been grateful for in my marathon training is my dad. And he's run, I guess, 5 or 6 or more marathons in his lifetime, and he's not able to do that at this point, but he really helped both last year for my first marathon and this year for this marathon to train me. And one of the most powerful ways that my dad helped to train me was he would just tell me the horror stories from his marathons. And he told me about his first marathon and how, you know, just his friend of his was videoing him, and he was coming by some point in the middle of the race, and he was really starting to die. And he was videoing him. He said, "Go, Larry, you're looking great. Go, Larry." And then he goes by, and he says, like, to the guy next to him, "And he's looking rough. This is bad. This is not going well." And so, my dad had to learn some of these lessons the hard way before he got onto to doing better and better in his marathons. And some of the strategies he gave me that he figured out after running like 5 or 6 marathons, I was able to start on my first marathon and not repeat some of those same errors. And I was so grateful for that. And you know what we have right here, brethren? We have a treasure trove of mistakes and successes to learn from. You read the book of Proverbs, and it's like, you don't have to be the fool every single time to learn the lessons. You can be the wise man because you listened to what God has given us ahead of time. You can look down the path at the people who've had to run the same race course that you have, and you can learn what not to do and what to do to overcome, to do better before you've even had the training. We are so blessed, of all people, to have a treasure like the Bible to be able to tell us in whatever situation of life you might be in, whether it's family matters, you have examples of good and bad families in the Bible to figure out, okay, how can I navigate this? Whether it's other kinds of relationships in your life, you have examples, good and bad, how to marry, how not to marry. You have examples of how to evangelize, how to do better in that, what was effective. You have examples, you name it, whatever area of life it is, you have good examples and you have bad examples. And we need to be the people who are not trying to reinvent the wheel. We're not trying just to stubbornly go our own way and learn the same lessons over and over. And isn't that the truth? A lot of times when we choose to go our own way, we come back around and you're like, you know what? The Bible was right all along. I should have just listened to the Lord. And it would have saved me a lot of time. You want to talk about a shortcut? This is a good kind of shortcut that the Lord wants us to take, is to learn from the mistakes of others. But at the same time, which by the way, 1 Corinthians 10:6, that passage talks about what happened to the Israelites was written for us. We're supposed to learn. Don't be like the Israelites in the wilderness. Don't complain like that. Don't indulge like they did. And they were destroyed. You see what happens when you do that? Don't follow them. But at the same time, we need to learn from our own mistakes too. And that was one thing about running the second marathon that was really helpful for me, is I made some big mistakes in my first marathon, especially having to do with how much water I was drinking during the race. Because you're supposed to start drinking water at mile 2 of the marathon. You don't think you need water at mile 2. I just started. You know, I'm not even a quarter of the way through, but you have to start. And this year I was taking walk breaks at the water starts, taking double water. And it changed the whole course of my race. I ran a much better race this year because I learned from the mistakes of last year. There are going to be times where either we weren't taught about something or we've made a stupid decision despite good advice. But one of the amazing things that God does in the scriptures is he helps people to learn from their mistakes. And that should be a humbling thing for us, is that there are mistakes that we didn't have to make and we should have avoided. But even when we do those things, God can even use our past sins for good. That's a powerful God who can do that. He can take our own rebellion against him and turn it around and use it to strengthen us. Because, tell you what, there's nothing like learning it yourself. I learned at mile 18 of my marathon last year what not to do. And it really helped me in planning for this year. Those lessons stick with you. We shouldn't have to learn all our lessons that way. But God can use those things for our good and use those things for the good of other people too. I can now help other people if they want to run a marathon and say, hey, here's some of the things I've learned. I've still got a lot to learn. But man, you know, don't do this. Don't be like me and go down this path. I know where it goes. And brethren, we have a whole host of people, even in this room, that have made mistakes and learned and grown from them. And we need to be learning from one another. Us young people, we need to be learning from the people that are older than us. Our society worships youth and thinks that the youth has all the answers. And that is a foolish, foolish concept. There are things that youth can do. The youth is a blessing, but man alive, we need to be learning from those who have already run the race ahead of us and can help steer us in the right direction. Old age is not always right, but many times those who speak from experience or will be really, really able to help us in our walk. That's certainly true for me in my training. One of the beautiful things that we have about learning the race that Jesus ran in Hebrews chapter 2. Look at his motivation. Read this passage with me. Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 2. In learning from our own examples, remember Luke 22:32, Jesus said when to Peter, when you've fallen, come back and strengthen your brothers. Peter was able to learn from his mistakes, and we can learn from ours. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 2. After this long list of people who've already run the race in chapter 11, he says this. Hebrews 12 verse 1. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who, for the joy set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. The Hebrew writer here gives three different things to think about as you're running your race with endurance. He says, I want you to look back at those who've gone before. Since we have so great a cloud of witnesses who've learned the ways to do this, and they fell, but they kept going, they got back up, learn from them. They're cheering you on. They're the ones trying to get you to cross the finish line, to get through this race. Learn from them. And then he says, lay aside the sin and the stuff that's going to weigh you down. That's one thing about running the marathon, is you start the race with a lot less than you think you should, because you might be really cold at the start of the race, but by the time you get going, you don't need that like extra jacket and stuff. And actually what they do along the course is people sometimes will start off and they'll just start shedding those extra layers as they run, because you don't need it by the time you get to the end. And similarly, you're not going to try to run that whole race with some big winter coat on or some set of weights on you. It's ridiculous, but yet when we try to hold on to the sin in our life and try to have like one foot in the world and one foot at trying to serve the Lord, that's what we're trying to do. It's like trying to run with all this extra backpack and stuff that we just don't need. It's temporary stuff. Let go of it so that you can finish the race. But the thing he says is get rid of that stuff, but focus ahead. It's a lot like what Paul says in Philippians, isn't it? Forgetting the things that lie behind, straining forward to the things that lie ahead. The same picture here, pressing on, running with endurance. And he gives Jesus as the example. He says, fix your eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith. You want to see how to do it perfectly? Here's how Jesus did it. What was his motivation? For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross. The cross was an incredible endurance experience. What kind of motivation would it have taken to get through the cross? It says that Jesus had a joy that was set before him. And you know, the Lord gives us a lot of different kinds of motivations, doesn't he? The Lord gives us some negative motivation. The Lord does motivate us with fear. When Jesus talks about it's better to cut off your hand or pluck out your eye than to be thrown into your whole body, be thrown into hell. That's a bit of fearful motivation, and that's powerful motivation, especially when we're getting started out. I had some fearful motivation for my first marathon to not repeat some of those mistakes. But fear is not the ultimate motivation that I think that we need, really, to fuel. There's times where we really do need some fear. But the motivation that got Jesus through, I think, was ultimately joy. It was a positive motivation of what he had to look forward to. And there's some debate about this. But if you were to think about this, what is the joy that is talked about in this passage right here? What was the joy that Jesus had set before him that allowed him to endure the cross? Why was he doing it? In some ways, I don't want to answer that question right now, just so you can kind of ponder it. But I'm going to take a stab at it this morning. Why did Jesus die? What was he doing it for? If you were to boil that answer down, he was doing it for salvation. He was doing it so we could get to heaven. He could do it for all these things. But ultimately, he was doing it for us. For people. For souls that will last for eternity. Jesus didn't have to go through all that stuff if it was just Jesus. But there are these souls that God created and put his image in them. And Jesus wants us. And Jesus, when he died, he didn't even guarantee that he would get every soul. And Jesus doesn't get every soul. We see that clearly in the scriptures. The majority of people take the broad way that leads to destruction. There's only a few who find life. But the joy that Jesus had at even the chance of having souls with him for eternity was enough to get him through the cross. And that doesn't help you feel valuable, I don't know what will. If that doesn't motivate you to think, if he would do that for me, if I was his joy, he ought to be my joy. The joy that he has promised of being with him forever is an incredible joy. that motivates us to lay aside whatever we have to lay aside, to get through, to endure whatever we have to endure, to get to where He is. Like Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you, that where I am, there you may be also. That's it in a core right there. So the question comes to us, what is your joy right now? If someone outside of you was to say, what really makes Stephen joyful? What really makes him happy? What motivates him and makes him tick? What would they say about you? What would you say about you? We need to fuel the godly joy that comes from making the Lord our strength and our song and our salvation. And that's what will really ultimately help us get to the finish line. And finally, just I think the main lesson from a marathon, from learning to run, is listen, just keep going. The only way to actually mess up a marathon is to quit. Because there's some people who run the marathon in like 2 hours, and that's ridiculous. Like, to get to where you can run a marathon in that time, you're running like 5 minutes or less a mile. Like, it's crazy. But that person who's jogging along with like the, you know, the car picking up the cones at the end of the race, they finish the marathon as well. And like the parable of the laborers that Jesus told, you know, the guy who started the day and worked for the master, and the guy who started at the end of the day, they both finished the day. They both worked for the master. And the main thing we have to do, brethren, is just don't quit. Just hold on a little longer. Let the Lord see you through to the end. And Jesus says, you just got to take it one day at a time. And that's so true in the marathon. When you finish mile one, you're like, 25.2 to go! You know, that's not what you're thinking at mile two. You're just like, okay, mile two, we're going to get through this mile. All right, we get a walk break and water at the end of mile two. Okay, done with that? All right, walk break and water at mile four. Okay, we can do that, you know. And that's what the Lord gives us to do, isn't it? And when he talks about worry in Matthew chapter 6 in the Sermon on the Mount, he ends that with saying, listen, don't worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And brethren, if we're going to get to the end, that's one of the great strategies we have to have, is to just focus on today. And don't worry. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. All these things will be added to you. Do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will care for itself. Each day has enough trouble for its own. And that's what God asks us to do. While it's still called today, serve Him. Run with endurance for today. Tomorrow may seem like it's going to break your back, but God will get you through today. And then when tomorrow comes, God will see you through tomorrow. And He'll see you through the next day and the next day. And that's how we can finally get to the end. Sometimes our life just feels so overwhelming. It just feels like we're going to be crushed. But you know what? When we think about what the Lord's promised us, He says, I'll give you your daily bread. We can make it through today. And we can do what's right today. And you know what? We don't even know if we have anything more than today. Today might be the finish line of our race. And I want us to think about that as we extend the invitation this morning, is that we don't know how long ultimately this race is going to be. Life is more like a marathon than a sprint, but we don't know exactly where the finish line is. And maybe you're here this morning and you know that you're far from God. You haven't started running the race for Him, and you are lost in your sin. And if the Lord comes right now, you're lost. And maybe you're here and you're really tempted to quit. And you're really ready to just throw in the towel and say, this is just too hard. I just can't do this. I'm just too discouraged. We want to help you. We want to be here for you as fellow people who are running the race. There's nothing like, as you're running a marathon, someone else coming alongside you and you're like, I'm just dying here. And someone else to help you through the finish. And that's what we're here for this morning as your brethren. The Lord is calling you to lay aside your sin and to run with endurance. And we want you, if there's anything we can do, for you to let us know about that so that we can run together the race that's set before us. If there's any way we can help you to be right with God and to finish well this morning, come while we stand and while we sing.